It's Lars. Thank you for checking out my podcast, and have a great day.
Are you approaching retirement, or maybe you've just changed jobs? If so, you'll probably now have control of your 401k or IRA. Would you like to buy some property, notes, loans, start a new business, or even buy crypto? You can with a self-directed IRA. For more than a decade, I've been telling you about setting up a self-directed IRA through IRA Advantage. And while you may now hear other companies say they offer self-directed IRAs, you need to find out if they're truly self-directed. With a truly self-directed retirement account, you can make any investment the law allows. Whether you're talking about true diversification, starting your new business, or investing in private holdings, IRA Advantage through a truly self-directed IRA can make that happen. Take it from me, Lars. You've worked hard for your money. IRA Advantage will work hard to keep it yours.
Would you like to learn more about truly self-directed IRAs? Then visit IRAAdvantage.com. View our videos and call IRA Advantage. That's IRAAdvantage.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome to my favorite day of the week. It is First Amendment Friday, and it's my pleasure to be with you. Glad to get to your phone calls and emails. And by the way, if some of you heard the shows over the last couple of days, yeah, we had some satellite problems caused by a broken fiber line somewhere in America. So in any case, we're back on our Radio Northwest network, and that is 24 stations that cover the states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, and we make sure we talk about the issues of the Pacific Northwest. And then on First Amendment Fridays, the reason it's my favorite day of the week, my work week never really ends, so it's not the end of the week for me. It's the day that we open up the lines and give everybody a chance to sound off, and nobody gets a chance to say, I couldn't get my issue on the air. Well, you're talking to the whole Pacific Northwest today, and I'm glad to have you. At 866-HEY-LARS, that's 866-439-5277. You can send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. You can vote in our Twitter poll. Today's question, should taxpayers have a right to know what is in a public employee contract before the deal is cut? Now, I think the answer to that should be yes. But you know what? It never happens. And if you don't believe me, check the news reports. You'll see that, and I'm going to talk about the Seattle teacher strike and the end of that teacher strike and the consequence for taxpayers, for parents, and for students. But this is a perfect example. You know, the union signed off on this contract more than 2 weeks ago, and the public only found out what was in it just a short time ago. And one of the things they found out is that the contract includes $190 million that the Seattle public school system does not have. And if you say, well, I don't know, how could that happen? I mean, how in the world could that happen? I mean, if you told, let's say you ran a small company and you decide to have an end of summer picnic. So you tell one of your workers, listen, we can buy the hot dogs and the hamburgers and the buns and the mustard and the ketchup and the chips and everything else. We can buy that for about $500. Go out and buy what we need for the end of summer picnic for the company. So your employee goes out and doesn't spend $500. He spends $2,000 and comes back and says, boss, I went ahead and bought the stuff for the picnic and I spent $2,000. And the boss says, I only had $500 set aside for that. What do you expect me to do? Well, this is the position the Seattle Public Schools has put taxpayers and parents in. They have been obligated to a formal written contract with a labor union that the school boards of America and the school boards here in the Pacific Northwest are all too often willing to just sign off on. Say, we signed a contract, they get the money. And if the taxpayers say, well, where the heck is that money supposed to come from? And the school board says, well, it's not going to come today, it'll come next year, so we're going to come back to you. And we're going to tell you, by the way, we signed a deal, we obligated to you to $190 million that we don't have. So you have a couple of choices. One choice is you can, you know, increase your taxes and pay the money that we have already pre-spent on your behalf, but without your permission and without you even knowing what we were doing. Or we can cut a whole bunch of teachers and cram your kids into classrooms that are way overcrowded because we obligated you to a raise with money we do not have. I have always thought that we should have the right to know what's in the contract. I mean, if you go to buy a house or you go to buy a car, even when you go to buy groceries, you know what you're buying. And if you get to the checkout aisle at the grocery store and they say, that'll be $300, and you say, well, I only have 250, I better put a few items back. You don't get that permission with public employee contracts. Governors, state senators, state representatives, city councils, county commissions, and school boards are frequently obligating the taxpayers to monies that they don't have to spend. And I think we should know what's inside those contracts. So, for example, question number one, how will Seattle pay the $190 million they have promised but they do not have? Seattle School Board says, we don't know. We'll have to ask the taxpayers. Number two, how will the kids make up the 5 school days that they missed because of the labor union's choice to strike at the beginning of the school year? Again, the Seattle School District says, we don't know. And the third question, should the public have a right to know what's in the contract affecting their taxes and their schools and their kids before the offer is made? I would say yes to that. You can vote in our Twitter poll at Lars Larson Show, and it's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Since it is a First Amendment Friday, let's get right to calls. Leonard is a naysayer, and as you know, naysayers always go first on this show. Leonard, welcome to the program. What do you and I disagree about?
Well, yesterday, Lars, you were talking about the gas line, and you felt that the United States would blow it up because of the war between Ukraine and Russia. But you have to step back and take a look at the bigger picture. Who would benefit most of the gas being shut off to Europe? China.
The U.S.
The gas line. No, China would. Because China has a gas line coming straight out of Russia. And then if.
And we sell LNG to Western Europe. You might want to be aware of that, Leonard.
Yes, I'm aware of that fact. But the simple fact is that China still has a big interest in doing that. And I ain't saying that Biden, a friend of China, wouldn't take the pipeline out. But what I'm saying is China has one. If the gas is shut off and the power is restricted, production of stuff in Europe is going to decline. Who's going to step up and start producing? China will.
Possibly.
So hey, China has a lot more to go than Leonard, the United States.
I'm going to ask Dusty. Dusty, can we get that soundbite from Joe Biden from February talking about Nord Stream? You are aware that the president of the United States actually threatened to do exactly this back in February. You know that Joe Biden said he would take out the Nord Stream 2 pipeline?
Yes, I understand that from what your conversations were yesterday. And like I'm saying,
I want you to hear it from his own. I want you to hear it from his own lips, because when a pipeline has been blown up and the U.S. stands to benefit and the president of the United States made the threat to do it, if you don't believe me, listen to Joe Biden make that threat back in February before Russia invaded Ukraine to take out that pipeline. Listen.
If Russia invades, that means tanks or troops crossing the border of Ukraine again. Then there will be no longer a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it.
How will you do that?
Hold on.
Exactly. Since the project and control of the project is within Germany's control.
We will, I promise you, we'll be able to do it.
Now, is that not the president of the United States saying they invade Ukraine, we're taking out the pipeline? And now the pipeline's been taken out.
I agree, Lars, and I agree that Biden, I don't put it past Biden to have our people do it. But what I'm saying is it's his friends in China that really pushed him to that point. Yes, we're making all those. We are selling gas to Europe, but China still has a direct impact, because if Russia can't sell their natural gas and they need income, China can then convert that over instead of using U.S. dollars, which they've already trying to do.
And you may be right about that. Back in a moment. It's First Amendment Friday live on the radio, live on the Radio Northwest Network.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right.
You're bloody well right. You know he got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
The point seems so very obvious that you'd think the leadership of Portland and Seattle would get it. If you cut cops to the bone, you're going to get a lot more crime and violence. Both cities were severely short of officers before the pandemic, and before the death of George Floyd set off a year of rioting. Both cities responded by cutting even more cops. Yeah, what could possibly go wrong with that? Both cities promised that warm and fuzzy innovations, things like focused intervention teams, oh, it sounds so cool, that would fix the problem. It has not. Today, Portland has fewer cops than at any time since 1989, about 12 cops per 10,000 citizens. The national average is twice that. Among the 50 biggest cities in America, Portland ranks 48th out of 50. Portland is on track to set another murder record this year after breaking a big one last year. The problem is finding people who actually want to be a cop in a city that embraces Antifa's "all cops are bastards" message. Till that stops, until we hire more cops, expect more blood in the streets. And now the grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
The way has been paved by Trademark Paving. Just Pave It, serving Southwest Washington.
Today's Daily Grill, I'm going to award at the suggestion of our friends like Randy Pebble over at Shift Wah. Next month, he writes, you will see even more increases in Department of Licensing fees out of touch Democrat lawmakers in Olympia. The following increases become effective October 1st. A 75% hike in the cost of an enhanced driver's license and the additional fee, and identicards go from $24 to $42. A 75% increase in the enhanced driver's license additional fee and identicards from $32 to $56. A 100% increase in the cost of license photos from $10 to $20. And these increases come after a series of increases in July, including a 300% increase for license plates and a 200% increase in replacement license plates. Now, if you think the people in Olympia or Salem or Boise are actually accurately representing your point of view as a citizen, I would suggest you consider that and then ask yourself the question again. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Mobile Joe's RV Collision. Get back on the open road and back to your adventure with Mobile Joe's. No body damage, too big or small. Collision or paint repairs, Mobile Joe's RV Collision fixes them all. Rob writes in, Lars, as far as motive, the Biden administration has openly declared on multiple occasions ending those pipelines. And it's been said by both Joe Biden and Victoria Nuland. As far as Russia's concerned, they already control whether gas comes through those lines. They control the valves on their end. They gain nothing but destruction. As far as capability, the U.S. and NATO lead the field of underwater sabotage. Hands down, it's not even close. And as far as opportunity, those pipelines were stuck in NATO-dominated waters, hence the cited jurisdiction of the investigation. While nobody can say for certain without hard evidence, we in the West damage our own credibility yet again on the altar of smearing Russia or covering for the Biden administration. If it was indeed the Biden administration that blew up the pipeline, it sets a rather striking precedent, damaging infrastructure jointly owned by one of our allies, Germany. Signed, Rob. Send those emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. I want to do something a little unusual at this point. I want to say that Jeremy Scott is a young man whose name you occasionally hear doing the news on our flagship radio station, KXL. He has been a long time what we call a board operator who makes sure that things get on the air, whether it's commercials, whether it's network news, whether it's local news, and doing the local news as well as making sure this talk show gets on. He is now going to leave, and he's going to have to comb his hair. Because he's going off to the glamorous world of TV news. Jeremy, welcome to the show. You don't come on very often.
Lars, you know, they always said you had the face for TV or the face for radio. I do not have a face for TV. That's why I've been in radio all my life. I will be leaving KXL and going to into TV news. However, I don't think at least for the interim, I'll be working behind the scenes. So I yes, I've got to shave and I've got to look nice, but I can keep my face for radio.
But you can, you get a chance to influence and put some stories out there. And I know you're good at finding stories. You find stories for us on many occasions. You'll be able to do that and maybe get some stories told that haven't had as much attention put to them.
Well, they have one of the shows that's called The Story, and it's really one of those shows that can expand upon a story. As a news guy, I feel that there are so many different angles with news stories that very rarely get covered. A lot of times we just take press releases and we put them on the air. A lot of times we take quotes and we put them on the air. But we don't talk to the people who it really affects and who it impacts. And, you know, it took a lot for me to really stay in Portland. I'll tell you that honestly, Lars, because of everything that I've experienced personally and professionally.
You mean like murders in your neighborhood?
Murders in my neighborhoods, mass shootings outside my front door, being assaulted, being mugged on public transit. Why would I want to stay in a town like this? It's because I believe that there is hope for the future. And through the stories that we tell on the air, we can provide a little bit of a sense of hope in this doom and gloom world that we live in. So if there's anything that I leave here at KXL, it's that. And if there's anything that I take into this next endeavor, it's that. We have to have hope for the future because there is so much dire in today's world.
Well, Jeremy, good luck to you. We'll stay in touch. And he's going off to the NBC affiliate. That's KGW, its sister station in Seattle is King. I think you've even got a sister station in Boise, Idaho. So good luck to you and stay
Thanks,
in
Lars.
Touch.
Thanks, Lars.
You betcha.
Always a pleasure.
That is Jeremy Scott. He's been many, many years with our flagship station, KXL. He's got a lot of years ahead of him. To your calls now on First Amendment Friday, let's go to Patty in Lake Stevens, listening on the Radio Northwest Network. Hey, Patty, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi, I was just wondering, how come you don't hear about any of the trans girls fighting to get into the boys' bathrooms and locker rooms, and then also getting onto their sports teams?
I think it does happen occasionally. In fact, I heard about one just the other day, Patty, but for the most part, you don't hear about that, and it's because, especially when it comes to sports, there was one young lady, and I think she was at Harvard. She was a fairly good female swimmer. She went on to the men's team because she said she had changed her gender identity. She was an absolute failure on the men's team, and so she fairly quickly quit. And I think that's why, because females who then say, I identify as male, when it comes to sports, that never works in the former female's favor, if that makes sense.
Well, there's the two girls that were, I think, on a high school football team. They were just headed on the news, and they were girls, and they just got onto the boys' team, and they were really good. So
it does happen from time. You know, my late father was in a movie they shot, and it was set in the Northwest. It actually happened in the Northwest. It was called Quarterback Princess, and it was about a young lady who was both one of the homecoming princesses. She was also the quarterback on the football team. It happens from time to time, but not too very often. It's First Amendment Friday. It's the Lars Larson Show, and it's the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a First Amendment Friday. Always glad to get your calls. And yeah, we had some satellite troubles earlier this week. That and a cut fiber line, that happens from time to time. But I'm glad to get to your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. In the last couple of days, I've been telling you that I don't want Oregon voters. I'm not an Oregon voter. I vote in Washington State, but people ask me who I'm going to back and who do I think would be best. I'm a longtime friend of Betsy Johnson. I don't know Christine Drazen as well, but Christine Drazen is the Republican nominee, and I think she deserves to win because of her positions on the issues. She's pro-life. The two she's running against, Johnson and Kotek, are not. On other issues, I agree with Drazen's position. There's a brand new poll I literally got 15 minutes ago from Nelson Research. Now, I've told you that June, August, and September, there were polls, one out just this week, not this one. And they all showed about the same result over 3 months. Betsy Johnson around 18 or 19%. Tina Kotek trailing Drazen at about 30 or 31%. And then Drazen in the lead, but within the margin of error. Well, this latest poll from Nelson Research, same thing. 33.5% support for Drazen, 31.5% for Kotek. That's within the margin of error. Betsy Johnson not even in the running at 19.2%. So if you've had some of your Republican friends saying, you got to back the former Democrat, Betsy Johnson. Look, I know her. I consider her a friend. She's not going to win. And you're going to be throwing your vote away. And you could help elect Tina Kotek, who is hard to the left of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. With that in mind, I want to talk to another candidate who's running, who I think is going to be the next member of Congress from Oregon's 5th District, and that's Lori Chavez Dreamer. Lori, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Lars. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here today.
You've been having some great debates with your opponent, and it sounds like you've been coming out on top.
Yes, we've had our two debates. We have another one on Monday. Looking forward to that, to really paint the story of my opponent who's pretending to be a moderate when she's a self-proclaimed progressive.
So tell me, what are the winning issues for you with people who are in the 5th Congressional District? What are the things that are making the biggest difference?
Well, for 15 months, we've been on the trail, Lars, and over and over and over again, people are truly concerned with inflation in the economy. They're seeing it every single day. You know, people want to say these are just talking points, but that's because people are truly talking about them. Gas prices, we can see, are going up. They're almost going to hit $6 again. People are concerned about putting food on their table, having conversations with people about picking and choosing one meal a day or filling up their car to get to work. I mean, those are real issues. We're hearing it every day. Whether it be on this side of the mountain or in Central Oregon. On Central Oregon, they're concerned about the agriculture and farming and putting food on the table and the lack of water. So we've got issues to address, but it all is going to come down to the economy and inflation and how we can get those prices down for Oregonians.
Now, I know your opponent won't come on the air. Your opponent's invited to come on the air, but you know, Democrats tend not to want to come on and answer the tough questions. So you have to answer it for me. Being fair to your opponent, what answer does your opponent give when it comes to massive inflation like America hasn't seen in 40 years, huge increases in fuel costs, and families barely able to pay their bills? What's the answer?
Well, she's pretending to say that she cares about working families. But if we continue to go under the guise of the Green New Deal, if that's the only lens that we're seeing things through, you know, another $93 trillion over the next 10 to 12 years, you know what that does to a household? About $700,000 per household through 2029. If you care about working families, you can't continue to strap them with reckless, out-of-control spending. So she's going to pretend to be a moderate. She's going to tell the people that she really cares. She wants to stop the spending, but she's endorsed by Elizabeth Warren. She's endorsed that she thinks Governor Brown and Nancy Pelosi have done a good job. She thinks President Biden is doing a good job. And actually, President Biden endorsed Kurt Schrader, because she ran far left of him. So a self-proclaimed progressive is laughable to me. She's endorsed by the Congressional Progressive Caucus, who was founded by Bernie Sanders. So,
by the way,
can't be moderate.
Does the issue of this invasion by illegal aliens, an estimated 5 million since Biden became president a year and a half ago, does that ever come up?
Yes, it was asked actually twice. And her verbatim answer was, the border is closed. It is not open, and it's a publicity stunt to go down there and see it with our own eyes. I will tell you what the bigger consideration should be, and the bigger fear is this fentanyl crisis that we're seeing on the streets of Oregon.
But that's a piece of it, right?
Oh, a huge piece of it. But the human trafficking is a piece. I mean, the fact that we don't even know who's coming across the border is the problem. We can't keep track of 6 million. Actually, the number is 6 million over the last 24 months.
I believe.
You know, we don't know about these drug cartels and who the gang members are. We have no control of that border. So securing the border is a national security. And as a member of Congress, we need to make sure that we secure that border.
Do you know, Lori, I actually saw a report from CBP this week that said the cartels, the Mexican drug cartels that traffic people, children, drugs, and illegal alien workers, because those are four separate categories, their estimated net profit since Biden became president is $2.6 billion. These folks are making money like crazy.
They control the southern border. I was down in McAllen, Texas, a few weeks ago, and what they do is they put bracelets on the migrants coming over so that they know how much they owe to these drug cartels. The Mexican government is not running right there along the border, I will tell you. And the Border Patrol, they need help. The sheriffs are asking. They want the president to come and see with his own eyes and not ignore the problem. And we know there's our President Vice President Harris hasn't been down there either. And my opponent, she says the border's closed, nothing to see here. I'm not interested in going down. So I will tell you, as Americans, we have a problem on our hands, and we need to make sure, as the next member of Congress, when I win this seat and take back the House, we need to address securing that border.
You can find her at Lori, L-O-R-I, for Congress, F-O-R, not four, LoriForCongress.com. You know, Lori, one of the things I keep reminding people of, the northeastern states have gotten a lot of attention because of the illegal aliens either flown to Martha's Vineyard or bussed up to New York and Chicago and Washington, D.C., but you know that some of them are coming here. In fact, there are some stories that it's been tough to break it out because the liberal Democrat-run agencies of Oregon and Washington don't want to talk about it. But you know that all those illegals are not just going everywhere else in America and not to here. And I think the agencies here have been aiding and abetting them. And I'd point out to you that over a year ago, a Southern Oregon sheriff came on to talk about the fact that they'd found this dead guy, or he was nearly dead when he was dropped off. And they investigated his death and found over 100 human slaves in Southern Oregon, in Douglas County, working at a pot plantation and housed in horrible conditions, not fed well, not cared for. And when one of them got sick enough, they just dumped him by a gas station so he could die. And this is human slavery that's been brought back to America by the party of slavery, the Democrats.
Right. And when we open that door as a sanctuary state, and think about our roadways, Lars. We have the most roadways that can, they're not going to stay in one place as soon as they cross the southern border.
Nope.
Right? They're going to feed themselves out to all parts of our country. And that's why it's America's problem. And what comes along, you know, when they're seeking asylum is one, but what about the drug cartels? They're bringing drugs everywhere they go. Over 100,000 people died in this country last year. Think about that. 300 people a day are dying in the streets from fentanyl. That's what mom should be worried about. That's what dad should be worried about. We have got to secure that border as a matter of national security, and it should be and will be the one of the strongest topics that we need to talk about. I'm not okay with 300 Americans dying every single day.
No, I'm not okay with that or human slavery. And the asylum claims, wrong 90% of the time. They are turned down by the courts because they don't qualify. That's Lori Chavez de Remer. You can find her at LoriForCongress.com. She is running as the Republican for the U.S. House District, House of Representatives at the federal level, Oregon's 5th Congressional District. It's First Amendment Friday. I got to talk about some great shooting by one Tacoma cop. That's coming up next on the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. It's First Amendment Friday. We're live on the Radio Northwest Network. And if you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every single day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. We always put naysayers to the head of the line. Our Twitter poll is another way to take part. Should taxpayers have a right to know what's in a public employee contract offer before the deal is cut? I think that's an easy yes. You should have a right to know. Do you? No. I mean, I gave you as the most recent example of it, although we could find examples just about any time during any year where public employees are offered a contract and the taxpayers are on the hook to pay it. And the last people to know what the contract says are the taxpayers. In other words, state management, or in the case of school district management knows what's in the contract offer. The union members know what's in the contract offer. The only people who don't know are the ones who actually have to pay the bill. So should you have the right to know? I'd say yes. Today's Twitter poll can be found at Lars Larson Show, and it's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Now, yesterday, I asked you, should Northwest hospitals drop the vax mandates and hire back the staff they cut? I said yes. Yeah, and the majority of you said yes as well. I do want to talk about a shooting that happened about a month ago. Now, it was in Tacoma. What had happened was a man was in a neighborhood. He was armed. He had an AR-15 style rifle, and he was shooting up the neighborhood. And so what happened was the police responded, and one part of that response was decisive, and it was quick. So here's the way that Tacoma described it. Now, I'll tell you why I'm talking about it today. Monday of this week, they finally released the body cam footage of the officers who arrived. It was the 29th of August. They contacted the assault victim, a man had been assaulted, at 2:46 in the afternoon. So this is broad daylight. They were advised they had probable cause for a domestic violence assault. Communication was attempted with the assault suspect. He was not cooperative. 10 minutes later, shots fired. He's actively shooting at us. This is a guy who's shooting at the cops. That went on for a few minutes, and then about 1 minute after 3 o'clock in the afternoon on the 29th of August, just about a month ago, an officer stated the assault suspect was firing on an officer named Madison. He keeps firing, and he's reloaded. And then less than a minute later, shots fired, suspect down. I want you to hear how this happens. And because it's radio, let me describe what you see on the body cam. You've got an officer. He's driving quickly around the scene to put himself in the proper position. He then stops his car. He's wearing a body cam, and it's running. From the moment he stops his car, I went back and looked at the clock. From the moment he stops his car, steps out of the car, goes back to the back end of the SUV, opens it up, pulls out his rifle, works the charging handle on his AR-15 style rifle, gets to the side of the vehicle so he's got some concealment and some cover, draws aim and fires. The total elapsed time, 29 seconds. Take a listen to the way it went down.
All right, he reloaded. Reloaded. Are those shots coming from the outside? I don't know.
X-ray 316, shot fired, suspect's down. He's on Madison, just south of 67.
29 seconds. This guy puts his coffee cup back in the cup holder, drives to the scene, gets out the rifle, charges the rifle, steps to the position, takes a moment to draw aim, and from 183 yards away, he stops a threat. Now, I know that some of you will say, well, we don't like it when the police shoot people. As far as I'm concerned, when the police shoot someone in a neighborhood, as this officer did, it's not an impossible shot. I mean, I've shot a deer and elk at ranges of that grade. But 183 yards away, you haven't even had time to, say, take a breath, steady, you know, because you realize that you're breathing, your nerves, moving into position, all that. He takes that tough shot, one shot, suspect down, threat eliminated. That's the way to get it done. Congratulations to the cop in Tacoma who took that shot. I wanted you to hear, this is the kind of pressure you put on cops. You've got to be right. You've got to be on target. Ideally, it would be one shot, and you've just eliminated a threat, a man who is trying to kill police officers. I know the cops don't get enough credit most days of the week. I was glad to see this. Pierce County Sheriff's Department and the Tacoma Police Department involved in this. The Pierce County investigation team, they've released the body cam footage, and I say congratulations to the cop who made that shot, because if we could have all police work done so decisively so that when there's a threat, this man's shots in that neighborhood could have hit anybody in that neighborhood, could have killed a cop. It's good that we saw that done. To your calls. Let's go to Ron. Hey, Ron, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network on First Amendment Friday. We're close to the break, so what's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. Hey, you've talked about this little city before that had the trolley, and they sent the stooge in and run it in the ground, so the GM. And well, I think that they've had 100 years to perfect this, and they're doing the same thing to us now. They sent the stooge in to run us in the ground so they can get whatever they want done.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think the stooge is Joe Biden, who doesn't seem to know where he is most of the time. And he's got a vice president in Kamala Harris who thinks we have a special relationship with North Korea. It's just that big a joke. And you've got the Lars Larson Show. Lars here with a question for you. Why is it that some people aren't as stressed out about the future as you'd think they would be? The answer? They're probably among the millions of Americans who prepared themselves with emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. If the worst ever happens, literally millions of American families are already protected from dealing with those empty store shelves. Is yours? Mine is. If not, go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now and grab some emergency food kits, at least one for every member of your family. These kits give you a wide variety of delicious meals that average over 2,000 calories per day. That's that's what you need. Everything stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. Order your kits right now by going to MyPatriotSupply.com. Your order ships fast and arrives discreetly in unmarked boxes. Listen, this is something you need to jump on now before the next news headline stuns the world. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and your emails. It's a First Amendment Friday, and if you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we'll put you right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. You can send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. You can vote in our Twitter poll. You'll find that at Lars Larson Show on Twitter. And if you're not crazy about Twitter, just go to my website at LarsLarson.com. Should taxpayers have a right to know what is in a public employee contract offer before the deal is cut? And I would say yes. The unions know, management knows. Only the taxpayers who get the bill are kept in the dark until it's already a done deal. I think that's dead wrong. You can find the Twitter poll at Lars Larson Show, and it's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Now, we've been talking to a number of candidates because we've got an election coming up, if you haven't noticed. So one of the people who's running is Timothy Sean Sutherland, who is the GOP candidate to try to unseat a long, long time incumbent, Nancy Nathanson, in Oregon's 13th House District. Timothy, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Lars, so much for having me on. And a quick shout out to Victor for the introduction.
All right. Very good. Tell me this. How are you going to go about beating an incumbent? Incumbency, unfortunately, has a lot of advantages. What issues do you think are going to be best to get in front of people that you would address as a state lawmaker if the voters make you one?
Well, the topic that politicized me, Lars, was the education system is just desperately broken. I'm the father to a 13-year-old son who goes to public school here. And he was, you know, shut out of school, and he was masked, and he was distanced. And there's no resources for them. And they're teaching them all kinds of crap in school. And I was just a regular soldier doing my job, taking care of my son. And when they finally shut down all the schools because of the COVID, then we started to realize what was going on in those schools. So that's my skin in the game is my 13-year-old son.
So if you got into the legislature, you'd seek to change some of those things.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm going to win the same way they won in Loudoun County, Virginia. And that's with the parents and the grandparents and the people that are angry about what's going on. Certainly there's other issues at stake, the safety of our citizens. Ballot Measure 110 is certainly a disaster and needs to be repealed. Ballot Measure 111 for health care for all is a disaster. They have no idea how much that's going to cost. And with the sanctuary statehood and sanctuary cities, we're just a lure for more non-tax-paying people. So there's lots of issues that are facing our people here in Oregon, and it needs serious people to be in there addressing them. I mean, for crying out loud, they're putting menstrual products in the boys' rooms in the schools.
And that was an action of the legislature, wasn't it? The legislature said for menstrual dignity that we had to put tampon dispensers in the little boys' room of elementary schools. And I still have people from around the country emailing me, my friends and others, who say, what in the world are they thinking about? And I said, they're not thinking. They're just acting politically.
Well, maybe the Democrats are trying to tell us that boys can have periods. I'm not exactly sure what that is. We've certainly seen that on the national stage that some of Biden's staff can get up there and say that, abortions could be had by men. But, of course, that's ridiculous.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll give you a little forewarning. The next segment, I already plan to run a soundbite from a doctor from Planned Parenthood testifying under oath to the Congress saying men can get pregnant. And I'm not joking, not one little bit. And where it comes home is that an awful lot of school districts have handed over the job of sex education to the advice and counsel of Planned Parenthood. I don't think they should be anywhere near a public school, but that's just my take on it.
Well, it's just crazy, Lars. And look, there's an old Southern saying, don't pee on me and tell me it's raining. So they're saying that critical race theory is not in the schools, and the gender fluidity is not in the schools. But, of course, it's a lie. Vincent Day, the new 4J superintendent, was appearing at a Northeast neighborhood meeting up here. He stood up, and a person, not me, stood up and said, hey, I want to know what's going on with critical race theory and gender ideology in the schools. And he just sat right there and said, you know, none of that's going on. Well, in my hand, I was holding the PowerPoint presentation that was this title. Let me read it. Oregon Educator Equity Summit, Critical Race Theory and Intersectionality in Education. And this is sponsored by the Oregon Department of Education. They spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on it. You know, stop lying to me. He also said that he didn't know what, you know, critical race theory, you know, it's not in his schools. But when he was interviewed by the Register Guard, he used the term, he says, there's going to be equitable outcomes for all students. Now, of course, that's language right out of the critical race theory handbook.
Sure it is.
So, you know, I'm at my wit's end, Lars, so that's why I decided to run. I have a full-time job. I'm a full-time parent. But these people simply need to be removed. And it's a tough chore. There's no doubt about that. If you look at the dollar amount that pours into my opponent's campaign, and like just to give you, for instance, Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors, $5,200, Oregon Soft Drink Association, Oregon Association of Realtors. But the ones that get me are the global brands. Here we go. Amazon, Alaska Air, Eli Lilly, Pfizer, AT&T. You know, it's just the list goes on. Just global brands contribute to her campaign, and she's up over $60,000 last I looked. So it's, you know, it's a tough task. But I'm out knocking on doors. I'm calling people. Every person that I talk to is angry, and they're ready for change.
All right, so Timothy Sean Sutherland is with me. Timothy, I'm just watching the clock on this. Where can people find you on social media to learn more about your campaign and maybe to give you a hand?
Please go to SutherlandForOregon.com, and that's not like the town, not like
no.
Sutherland. It's like Kiefer or Donald, SutherlandFor, Oregon.com. Log in there. I've got some videos. I got my stances on there. There's a way to help us, and we're going to be meeting at Dickie Joe's at 5:30 on Monday. So if you're close to Eugene, Dickie Joe's at 5:30. We can find something for you to do, and we need your help desperately.
Well, I'll tell you what, Timothy, I'm really impressed because so many people run for office, and I say, so what are you going to get done? And because it's a broad question. In other words, it's kind of a gift. I'm not asking them about one thing or another. And they go, well, you know, I'm going to go to the legislature and do a better job than the other guy. And you're like, hold on a second. You know, you have to give me something specific. You've given me specifics. You've taken positions on CRT and gender initiatives, menstrual products in boys' rooms, ballot measure 110, the legalization of hard drugs, sanctuary status for states and cities, Medicaid for non-citizens, that's a big one, universal health care, which you mentioned in passing. That one's going to be a train wreck. They're literally talking about spending, raising taxes that would be the equal to what the state is already spending just to run the state government. And adding on to that, and then inviting everybody and his brother to have free health care. Timothy Sean Sutherland, who's running against Nancy Nathanson to replace her in Oregon's House District 13. It's First Amendment Friday. We'll talk about pregnant men coming up next.
Out of birthing man.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. That's our parody songwriting friend, Buddy Brown from Mississippi, talking about there's something ain't right about a birthing man. Now, he was having some fun with the crazy idea out there that men can get pregnant to the point where even the Microsoft Corporation has put the pregnant man emoji up there for people to be able to use. And I know a lot of us have gotten a laugh out of it saying this is crazy. Men don't get pregnant. So it's the last thing that you think would have come up in a question and answer session, of all places, on Capitol Hill in front of a House committee, the House Oversight Committee, under sworn testimony, a medical doctor giving testimony, and the question that went to him from Congressman Andrew Clyde, Republican of Georgia, was this.
Dr. Kumar, can biological men become pregnant and give birth?
Now, you'd think there'd be an easy answer to that.
If you want to know why so many of us consider Planned Parenthood to be actually bug house crazy, check this out. A Planned Parenthood doctor, Dr. Bahavik Kumar, who is medical director for primary and trans care at the Planned Parenthood Gulf Coast Agency, says, yes, men can get pregnant. And if you don't believe me, if you think maybe I'm reading between the lines, take a listen to the question and the full answer.
Let's just keep it real simple. Just two yes or no questions. And this is for Dr. Kumar. Dr. Kumar, can biological men become pregnant and give birth?
So men can have pregnancies, especially trans men.
Especially trans men. So that answer, if I take him at his word, Dr. Kumar is saying, yeah, regular men and even trans men can get pregnant. Now, you understand what trans men refers to? It refers to somebody who was born a woman or a girl and grew up to be a woman and then decided at some point to present herself to the world as a man, except she has the biological plumbing to actually get pregnant. I understand that. So it's a woman who's pretending to be a man who says, I'm pregnant. But that's still a woman who is pregnant. So he's asked all these questions, and Clyde, the congressman from Georgia, says, so you're saying that a biological female who identifies as a man and therefore becomes pregnant is, quote, a man? Is that what you're saying? And Kumar, remember, these guys are testifying under oath. He said, well, those questions really miss the point. And then he reaffirmed his answer, and then Clyde said, someone with a uterus may have the capability of becoming pregnant, whether they are a man or a woman. That doesn't make any difference. This guy is a medical doctor. Now, he brags about the fact that he's performed thousands of abortions, so that gives you an idea of his point of view when it comes to human life and, I guess, the disposability of human life. And what Congressman Clyde came back and said was, that's not a man. The vast majority of the world will consider that to be a woman because there are biological differences between men and women. And then he said to this doctor, this is a member of Congress saying to a medical doctor, clearly any high school biology class teaches that men and women have different chromosomes. Females are XX chromosome, males are XY chromosome. I can't believe it's necessary to say this, but men cannot get pregnant and cannot give birth regardless of how they identify themselves. And Kumar, the doctor, again, he's the guy who's bragging about the thousands of abortions he's done. He says, but Clyde questioned the reason why he chose to testify. Why in the world would the Democrats have brought in a person whose title is Doctor of Trans Care for an abortion hearing when only biological women can become pregnant? Now, why is this significant to you? Let me warn you about something. An awful lot of schools in America, especially in the most liberal states, have said we need to do sex education. So how do we do that? Oh, I know. We'll bring in Planned Parenthood, and they will create the curriculum. They will create the information. So if your kids come home and they're telling you, Mom and Dad, men can become pregnant, and you wonder where did they get that crazy idea? This is where they're getting it, from Planned Parenthood that still enjoys about $500 million worth of taxpayer funding from Capitol Hill. That's just one of the things we have to get straightened out when the Congress is finally Republican majority. Let's go to Scott, who's a naysayer. Hey, Scott, it's First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Lars. This is naysaying in regard to the spot you did the other day about the COVID vaccine and causing menstrual irregularities.
Yes.
Now, that is true. It can. But what you left out is the fact that COVID infection does it also, and far more often. It also tends to increase the risk for miscarriage. COVID vaccine can cause myocarditis.
Yes, it does.
COVID infection does it far more often and more severely. And the same thing goes with fatal blood clots that have occurred in some women. Actually, it's not the Moderna or the Pfizer vaccine that did it, but it happened. But COVID infection does it.
And I'm aware of all those. Do you know what the significant difference is between the two, between the vaccine versus the disease giving it to you?
Yeah, it does it less often and less.
No, that's not the biggest difference. The biggest, does anybody
contriving something?
Okay, let me try this on you.
All right.
Does anybody choose to have COVID?
No, although some people have, fools that wanted to get it to prove a point, but no.
I don't even know of one of those. I know that from the chicken pox party days and all that, but I'm not aware of anybody I've ever spoken to who said I went out and I deliberately got infected. Does everyone who gets the vaccine get it deliberately?
Well, yes, although some people have felt coerced to get it.
Yes, and I agree with that. So what I'm saying is, if you have something that you don't have any choice about getting, and whether that's the flu or the mumps or the measles or COVID, you don't have any choice about it. And you say it has risks. You know the risks, and you don't choose. It happens. You may get infected even despite your best efforts not to. But with the vaccine, my question is, if the vaccine does not keep you from getting COVID, does not keep you from giving it to somebody else, does not keep you from dying from COVID, does not keep you from being hospitalized with COVID, all those things are true, why would you choose to do it?
That isn't true, Lars. It's simply
which isn't true?
That it doesn't prevent you from dying. It doesn't.
There are people who've been vaccinated who've died of COVID.
Well, there
correct?
Have been some, but the yes.
Quite a few.
You're being disingenuous.
I don't think so. I take everything in my life. I mean, almost everything in your life has risks and rewards. If you said, I plan to go on a car trip, and then you find out there's going to be a blizzard, and you say, you know what? I don't really need to make the trip. It's not required of me. It's not a command performance, so I'm going to not take the trip because you understand there are risks. I want people to be aware of the risks so that when they say, I'm going to get vaccinated, and I say, why are you doing it? Well, to keep from getting COVID. It doesn't necessarily keep you from getting COVID. In fact, the head of, I think it's Pfizer, has been four times vaccinated, and he's had COVID twice now. And so you say, well, if it doesn't stop me from getting it, but I have all these other risks that come along with taking the vaccine, why would any sensible person expose themselves to that and say, I'm going to do something that I know has expected side effects? And the craziest thing about the booster, have you read the list of expected or anticipated side effects, the regular side effects of it? And then you say, now, why would you do that? You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your phone calls and emails. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. And naysayers, you go right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Answer our Twitter poll. You'll find that at Lars Larson Show. And if you don't like Twitter, go to my website. Vote counts the same, LarsLarson.com. And our email address is easy, talk@LarsLarson.com. You know, if you listen to the show, I'm a bit of a tech nerd. I love technology, but I'm also well aware that almost every single piece of human technology, from the invention of fire to the invention of gunpowder, can be used for good purposes and can be used for bad purposes as well. And then I read this fascinating piece by Joe Allen, who's a writer and tech editor for The War Room Pandemic, and he wrote at The Federalist about some new federally funded investigation development of technology as it relates to human brains. I thought we'd get Joe on to talk about it a bit. Joe, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, Lars. Very glad to be here.
Would you mind describing for my audience exactly what has been happening in the way of the new monies that are flowing in, I guess, by the hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, to do research into how to manipulate the human brain?
Yeah, this is actually a major wave in biotech being funded by the federal government, beginning with Joe Biden's executive order September 12th, in which they pledged $2 billion. The executive order language is pretty disturbing. They're talking about, and this is very common now, but they're talking about rewriting the genome as if it were software. Now, the next day was the announcement of ARPA-H, the Advanced Research Projects Agency for Health, and it will be led by a woman, Renee Wegerson, who comes out of DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. And this is $1 billion that will go toward a number of genetic experiments, everything from fertilizer to microbiome genetic technologies to actually altering the human genome itself. Always safe and effective, right?
Yeah,
then,
right.
September 22nd was the announcement that the NIH will launch Brain 2.0. Now, this is just an expansion of an eight-year-old project, but the goal of Brain 2.0 is to map the human brain in its entirety. This has been compared to the Human Genome Project, in which a sort of generic human genome was produced in 2003 so that scientists could work off of that with the various variations, right? And, of course, yep. to manipulate the genome. Once the human brain has been mapped, all 86 billion neurons and all the trillions of connections between them, or if it's even just partially mapped, then DARPA and various other tech corporations, but DARPA, which is closely aligned with the Brain Initiative, will undoubtedly begin using that map in order to conquer that territory. And of course, the head of the Brain Initiative, John Guy, has talked quite openly about the sorts of technologies they hope to employ with the knowledge of that brain map, and they include deep brain stimulation devices to alter mood and behavior. And then, of course, the holy grail, a functional brain-computer interface that will allow the human brain to interface with artificial intelligence on a much more direct level.
Now, if I wanted to, I'm talking to Joe Allen, who wrote about this at The Federalist. He also writes at War Room. But, Joe, I know, like I said, every technology that I'm aware of in the world can be used for good or bad. So if you want to look at this charitably, you could say, well, you know, they'll figure out how to cure depression without having to take drugs, or they'll figure out how to, you know, cure other problems of human beings. But is that where John Guy seems to want to go with all this?
Well, you know, to his credit, his primary emphasis is, of course, on healing. And Renee Wegerson, the head of ARPA-H, she is primarily interested, at least publicly, on healing. But I have to disagree with the statement that technology is somehow morally neutral or value free. I really don't think so. You can't.
No, hold on, John. Just so I'm not misunderstood, I didn't say it was morally neutral. I said every technology that can be used for good can also be used for bad. And you know, I mean, an atom bomb can be, you know, used for good. It can be used for bad. Now, I guess it depends on your point of view and whether or not you're the person it's used on. I thought Hiroshima and Nagasaki saved millions of lives by dropping those bombs. But I'm sure that some people might disagree. No, but I think every single one of those technologies is even the ones that seem inherent, you know, that seem as though they'd only be used for good, could also be used for bad. And what I'm worried about is, you documented in your piece in The Federalist, the Pentagon has a big interest in this as well, don't they?
Absolutely. And I guess also, I don't want to put too much emphasis on whether a technology is morally neutral or can be value-free, right, value-neutral.
Yep.
Only just to say this, that there are certain likely outcomes to the use of any technology. And there's a certain constrained range of possibilities that any technology has, right? So in the case of a brain computer interface or direct brain manipulation, there actually has been a lot of really fascinating research and applications, right? So people have reported being less depressed or overcoming chronic depression or obsessive compulsive disorder or addiction by way of both deep brain stimulation implants, but also transcranial magnetic and ultrasound stimulation of the neurons in order to have these sorts of mood alterations or behavioral alterations. What I do think is important here, though, is all of this is based on a paradigm which basically replaces what religious people would call a soul with the brain. The brain in that paradigm is the seat of the personality and the consciousness, in fact, produces one's consciousness. And so, therefore, to tinker with the brain is to tinker with, or perhaps you could say perfect, the soul. And that sort of technocratic or transhumanist or simply scientistic philosophy really does pervade both the culture at DARPA and seemingly the culture at NIH. And so one would assume that the same sort of attitudes will be brought to ARPA-H. And as we've seen in the last 2.5 years, with everything from forcing onto parents and communities the acceptance of child transgenders, right? Or forcing the acceptance of vaccines and lockdowns as a way to upgrade the human immune system. I think that it should be very alarming to see the marriage of the military-industrial complex and the biomedical establishment in this way, given the last 2.5 years of history, if you don't want to go back 20 years with all the various pharmaceuticals, everything from antidepressants to OxyContin and other opioids, and just the entire premise that the human being can be shaped biologically and psychologically by way of technology.
See, and Joe, you've hit my page on this perfectly, because I'm concerned about this. You know, when you have today in America, people saying, well, we didn't want a little girl, or we didn't want a little boy. We'll just toss the baby, because we're going to perfect things. We're going to make sure things are perfect. We'll terminate a baby because it's Down syndrome. Well, now you've got a kid, and you're going to go in and rewrite part of his brain, or you're going to rewrite somebody else's brain. But it's all for their own good. It's always going to be portrayed that way. I want people to read the whole piece you wrote, because it's fascinating. And Joe, I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Lars. And I hope this is a value to your audience.
Oh, I think it is. That's Joe Allen writing at The Federalist. He said, we've entered a bizarre era where sculpting human brains and bodies and the underlying genes may soon be as commonplace as nose jobs and genetically modified tomatoes. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. It's First Amendment Friday. Your calls are welcome. This segment of the show is brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showing, no hassles, and you pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. Our Twitter poll question, and I'd love to get a naysayer on this. Should taxpayers have the right to know what's in a public employee contract offer before the deal is cut? Remember, most of these deals involving public employees in Oregon, Washington, Idaho, teachers or state workers, these are multi-billion dollar contracts. And the only people who don't know what's in the contracts are the people who are actually paying the bill, people like you and me. Let's go to Jason first. Hey, Jason, it's First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, how are you doing? I guess doing the... Well. The October surprise is that the price of liquid natural gas is going to be going through the roof, huh?
Probably.
And Putin's got more provocative, and he's got more advantage to blowing up the pipeline himself to hold the oil customers hostage this winter with the price of natural gas.
How does that happen, though? Because, Jason, if that pipe and the pipeline sounds like it's badly damaged, somebody did it. The Swedes and the Norwegians now say that the explosion they detected on seismographs, for God's sake, indicates an explosion that they said they would associate with a couple of 100 pounds of high explosive. Now, I don't know about you, but that says a state actor to me. I guess a terrorist group could have somehow got several 100 pounds of high explosive and then got it down to a location underwater and then stood back at a distance, either with a timer or some kind of trigger, and set it off. But that sounds like something that's...
They installed these mechanisms when they were creating the system. They had a self-destruct mechanism already installed.
Okay, so help me out with this, though. So Russia then says, you're not getting the gas unless you pay us more. There are two problems with that. Number one, the U.S. is selling some LNG to Western Europe. So if Russia no longer has the pipeline to deliver it, how do they demand a higher price for a product they just blew up the delivery truck for?
I'm not the math genius, Lars. You're going to have to call up one of your math. I wanted to switch over to the annexation. He's going to place 300,000 new troops in populated areas near... He's going to create a human shield.
You mean the troops? Oh, and you're saying that, that Ukraine won't be able to fight back because there's a civilian population there. That may be the case as well. Jason, I appreciate the call. Let's go to Brian in Prosser, Washington. Hey, Brian, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, I just wanted to share with you and the other listeners. My wife works at a fruit grower here in Eastern Washington, and earlier this week they got a stack of postcards for all their H-2A workers from the Secretary of State, encouraging them to register to vote.
And H-2As, of course, are foreign nationals, aren't they?
Correct, and it's a federal program, so I'm kind of wondering what the connection is to get this information to the Washington Secretary of State. But, I mean, man, if this is the way the game's being played, and it obviously is, we don't have a chance in November.
No, we don't. But I wanted to start with a more basic question, because if you tell me that H-2As are getting offers to vote, that's very specific. So you're going to say to these people, make sure you're registered to vote. And if you're sending it specifically to H-2A workers, you're sending it to people the Secretary of State's office know are not qualified to vote. They're not citizens. They don't have any right to vote. In fact, you can't be an H-2A worker if you're an American citizen, can you?
Absolutely. And now on this card, it does discuss the eligibility requirements.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, whatever. That's a smokescreen.
Well, and Brian, do you know, I've actually had people in state elections offices, I say to them, how do you know people aren't voting illegally who are foreign nationals? And they say, well, because right there on the card, it says if you sign this and you're not qualified to vote because you're not a citizen, it's a federal felony. And I said, oh, so you're led to believe that the only people who sign it are people who sign it legally. You're offered the card, and then it says in the fine print, hey, if you're signing this and you're a foreign national, you're committing a felony. What do you care? If you're an illegal alien, you're already breaking a lot of laws. I use that as my rule for that is, if you're about to rob the liquor store, Brian, I know you wouldn't, I wouldn't either, but if you're about to rob a liquor store, do you worry whether or not you're parking your car legally in front of the liquor store in, a fire hydrant zone? If you're about to walk in and rob the liquor store, do you worry about the crime of getting a ticket for parking in front of a fire hydrant?
I don't know, Lars. I guess all we can do is get the word out there.
And I'll tell you what, we'll put the question to the Secretary of State and ask her, why would you be sending cards inviting foreign nationals to sign up to vote?
That's and you think we'll get an answer?
Well, I always like to ask the question, because then I'm doing my due diligence. And then when people give me a no comment, or they just ghost me and they don't write back at all, I say, well, we put the question to them, they would not answer. That, in some cases, is answer enough. 866-439-5277. It's First Amendment Friday on the Radio Northwest Network.
Oregon Utility Notification Center wants to remind you that whether you're planting a tree, building a fence, or just making improvements around your farm or home, click or call before you start your work to get the area marked. Then dig safely and avoid contact with buried utilities. You owe it to yourself and your loved ones. Know what's below. Call before you dig. For more information, visit us online at digsafelyoregon.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your phone calls and emails, especially on a First Amendment Friday. If you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. One of the things you have to do these days is that if you're going to talk about politics, you have to understand the new rules of the road, and they are this. If you question the outcome of an election, you can either be very right or very wrong. If you question the outcome of an election and you're a Democrat, you will be celebrated. I mean, we have dozens and dozens of sound bites of the likes of Stacey Abrams and Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, everybody and their brother or sister saying why that election was fraudulent and the result of it was fraudulent. Now, when Democrats say it, the news media has decided that's okay. They are to be lauded for standing up for that.
But if Republicans or conservatives like me say, hey, November 3rd, 2020 was not a squared away election, they say, you are an election denier. You must be silenced. Now, I'll bet Paul Metzler gets at least some of that. He is with the Lane County Elections Integrity Committee, and he joins me now. Paul, welcome back to the program.
Good afternoon, Lars. How are you today?
Not too bad. Now, you have done a lot of hard work digging into the data about suspicious voting, in particular in your county, in Lane County. What'd you find?
Well, here's what we found. Here's what we did. You know, like so many people, we were outraged at what we saw happening on the evening of November 3rd, 2020. And, you know, folks on the left, they, God bless them, they've been pressing this idea of follow the science. So we decided, let's just do that. So we got the voter roll from the county and we started looking at it. And, well, the first thing we found is that there was more registered voters in Lane County than there are adults in Lane County. Then we started going through that voter roll and looking at some of the addresses. And the things we found there were just outrageous. We found things like vacant lots, which would have 10 or 20 people registered to vote there. Commercial buildings, which would have 10, 20, 50 or 100 sometimes people registered to vote at that address, and nobody lives there at all. Heck, we even found that the back parking lot at the West Eugene Walmart, nobody lives there, and there's 12 people registered to vote at that address. So after looking at the data, we decided to get out there on the streets and investigate it at the actual physical location. So what we did is we took that data and we sorted it out to identify residents' addresses that had eight or more registered voters at that address.
Great way to do it.
We printed it out. Yes. You know, a basic filter. Then we print that out on an affidavit form that lists the voter's name, their unique ID, and then it just asks two simple questions. Is this the person's residence address? And if no, do they intend to return? Because that's the qualifications that are set out in the Oregon law, which qualifies a person to be a registered voter.
Hey, Paul, do you mind if I I want to mention one thing at this point, because you've hit on something very important. Because otherwise you'd have a flaw in it, a small flaw. But Oregon's residency rules say you have to intend to return. So you might have snowbirds who say, well, I'm going to spend all summer and early fall in the Northwest, but then I'm going to Arizona. But I'm going to go there for less than 6 months, so I'm still an Oregon resident. And then when I return, so if you came to a house and there was nobody at the house, it might be explained by somebody who's away temporarily for a few months. It's not that they've left the state. They do intend to return, and they still qualify as a voter, right?
Sure, absolutely. In fact, there's some people on the voter roll whose residence address is a home in Lane County, but where they receive their mail is at a military base in Korea or Germany or Okinawa.
Sure.
You know, so clearly they're in the service. So that's absolutely legit, and that's why that question is there. Do they intend to return? So we just take this form with the list of names where at that address there's eight or more registered voters, and then we just go out and knock on the door, and whoever comes to the door, we hand them the list and ask them to check the box, yes or no, to each of those questions. And then we just go out and do that again and again and again. And what we found overall is that of that sorted out group of residents' addresses with more than eight registered voters at the address, 60% of the registered voters do not live at those addresses.
Wow.
So who knows where those ballots go?
No, but what you do know is that if that's the delivery address for the ballot, a ballot went to the address, even though the person doesn't live there, and somebody could have voted that ballot.
The ballot may be going to a different address because this is the residence address,
right?
And the voter roll has a separate mailing address.
Were you ever able to determine how many voters or votes because you can also check and see. I can check and see if somebody's actually cast a vote in the last election. I can't find out how they voted, but I can find out yes or no. Did they vote? Did they cast a ballot or not? Were you able to connect cast ballots to people who were registered but no longer live there?
It's difficult, but we did some. However, of this group of people who are registered to vote and do not live at the address, not very many of them wind up voting.
Okay.
From what we
fair
can
enough.
Tell. You know. So
What are the other highlights? And I'll tell people you can go find this at lanecountygop.org, some of the results of mm-hmm. what you've looked in. What are the other high points of your research?
We've found that the county is notably unresponsive. Four times we've sent letters and list these affidavits, and we get absolutely no response from the county. Hmm. So, they could respond saying we're all wet, you know, that we're completely mistaken, but we get no response at all so far. And that's what we're finding.
Well, I'll tell you, Paul, my concern mm-hmm. about this goes way back before 2020, because more than a decade ago, I had a candidate on who was running for office, and he was doing a lot of shoe leather. So he was walking around knocking on mm-hmm. doors, and he called me up and he said, we have these lists of registered voters. And he said, I walked up to one little house that couldn't have been bigger than 800 square feet, and there were 34 people registered to vote at that one house. And I said, well, that sounds suspicious. And he wasn't able to find out any kind of explanation for it. But 34 people registered as living at an 800-square-foot house doesn't exactly make any sense. But, Paul, I want you to keep up the research, and as you get more of the results, I'll be glad to share them with my audience on the air. That's Paul Metzler, who's with the Lane County Elections Integrity Committee. There ought to be one of those in every single county in the United States of America. Back in just a moment. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. It's a First Amendment Friday. I want to talk about inflation, or more specifically, Bidenflation, and the fact that the president wants to ignore the problem, but the economists say we're in big trouble. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
We lost the thread, along with many other countries, about a year and a half ago, with massively expansionary policies relative to the size of the GDP gap.
That is Larry Summers, and he is the former economist for President Barack Obama. And he took the collapse of America's economy in 2008 and stretched out the pain and the damage for more years than he actually had to. But I want to talk about what Larry Summers had to say. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to have you on board. And if you want to jump in, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@larslarson.com. Vote in our Twitter poll at Lars Larson Show. And welcome to the Radio Northwest Network, serving the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho for the past 22 and a half years. Now, about what Larry Summers said. Remember, I'm choosing a liberal economist or an economist for a liberal president when he says that we lost the thread. The thread for 40 years was America had inflation on an annual basis of about 2%. Sometimes it was a little higher. Sometimes it was a little bit lower. But we'd kept things pretty steady and level for 40 years. And as Summers says, well, we lost the thread because of a massive expansion. What he's talking about, the federal government under Joe Biden has decided to flush trillions of dollars into the American economy. And then they stand there at the White House and say, I'm not sure what's causing all this inflation. Look, classic economics says, even if you didn't have the kind of supply chain issues we've had, when you shorten up the supply of goods and there's the same amount of money, you get inflation. When you shorten up the supply of goods and you flush in a massive amount of money, you get inflation like what we're seeing. Inflation, the likes of which America has not seen in about 40 years. And of course, Joe Biden, last summer, about a year ago, at the tail end of last summer, about the time he had that catastrophic exit from Afghanistan and left thousands of Americans behind, he was the guy who was telling reporters, oh, these price hikes in gas and diesel, that's no big deal. And the inflation, it's just temporary. Well, guess what? You know what the economists are saying now? This is not temporary.
This has all the appearance of inflation that is going to be with us for a good long time, and that's not good news. For example, there's a number they use. One of the metrics they use is the Personal Consumption Expenditure Price Index, the PCE. It shows that inflation accelerated even more than expected in the month of August. And what does that mean? They say that inflation is broadening throughout the economy. Again, I'm not an economist, but what does that mean? It says inflation in August was stronger than expected, despite the Federal Reserve's efforts to bring down prices. According to price data that was released today, the Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, including food and energy, rose 0.6 of a point for 1 month after being relatively flat in July. That was faster than what the Dow Jones thought it was going to do. So, in other words, as some have put it, the inflation siren is going off. It's saying, according to Larry Summers, we're going to see low growth and high inflation. In other words, stagflation, the likes of which we haven't seen since Jimmy Carter was president of the United States, and we're going to see it for the next several years. And Larry Summers says the blame for all this goes to Joe Biden's so-called $1.9 trillion stimulus, which flushed all that money into the economy. Here calls now, and we always start with a naysayer, if there is one. Yuri, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What do you and I disagree about today?
Thanks, Lars, for taking my call. I want to just give you reasons why I think you're wrong about who damaged Nord Stream 2 and Nord Stream 1.
Okay.
So I know for sure. Here's my reasons why I know why I think that Russia did it. Reason number one, and please give me some time to explain, 30 seconds. Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2 pipelines, they can be levers to influence Russia as well. Not only Russia can use it to influence Europe, but Europe also can use it against Russia. How? Russia signed a contract with Europe to provide certain amount of natural gas to those pipelines to Europe. And if they do not hold their end of contract, Europe can take them to court. And Europe threatened Russia many times to take them to court because Russia pretty much almost closed and was letting through those pipelines very little amount of natural gas, I think like 5 or 7%, just to keep parts moving to prevent pipes from failing.
Okay, now we're about a minute into this, Yuri, and I'd love to talk to you for an hour about it. But tell me this. If Russia wanted to squeeze...
Give me a second reason.
Your 30 seconds is a little longer than 30, but get to your point, Yuri.
Russia losing badly in Ukraine, and they need a break. They need a break to regroup. So...
How does Nord Stream give them a break?
It's go to Ukraine and through Ukraine to Europe. They will say to Europe, look, please talk to Ukraine. We want a peace. Let's talk about peace so we can let gas through Ukraine to you guys, to help you guys. So Europe will push Ukraine to start talk peace with Russia. Those are the two main reasons that pretty much covers it all. And also Russia has the means. They have little submarines to do it. The pipes were in the neutral waters. Nobody knew the exact location of those pipes except Russia. That's another thing.
You're not going to tell me the U.S. Navy doesn't know exactly where those pipes were, and the U.S. Navy was carrying out operations in that exact area in the month of June of this year. Hold on, Yuri. I let you finish, and you rattled on for a long time. Tell me this. If Russia wanted to delay natural gas to Western Europe, and Western Europe right now is desperate for that. They're already telling people they're going to go through a winter where people are going to be ordered to keep their thermostats low, uncomfortably low, because they don't have enough energy to keep the country in proper shape. So if Russia said, well, we're having technical problems at our end or mechanical problems at our end, and we can't feed as much gas into the pipeline, they could have done that without blowing up their own pipeline. Now, address the issue that Joe Biden, President of the United States, on February of this year, and we've run the soundbite of him saying to reporters, if Russia invades Ukraine, there will be no Nord Stream 2 pipeline. And when a reporter said, well, how are you going to do that? And he said, just believe me, we have the capability to do that.
And then the pipeline blows up from what is estimated to be a couple of hundred pounds of high explosive. And the U.S. Navy was just doing exercises in that area in June. So the president promises there will be no Nord Stream 2. The U.S. also sells LNG to Western Europe. There's a benefit there. And Joe Biden wants to strike out against Putin. Why doesn't it make more sense that the U.S. may have been behind the explosion and not Russia?
Simple. Russia cannot close the pipeline completely to Europe because then Europe will take it to court and will win billions of dollars.
A country that has invaded another country is worried about getting dragged into court? I don't think so, Yuri, but you still didn't address the fact that Joe Biden threatened to make Nord Stream 2 not exist. And when reporters asked him, well, how? How are you going to stop it from existing? You don't control the project. He said, we have a way and we will make it happen. And it appears that it has. So I think Joe is my favorite suspect in that case. You got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. And it's my pleasure to be with you. If you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you want to vote in our Twitter poll, you'll find that at Lars Larson Show. And of course, you can always call the show. Joe Kent joins me now, who I think will be the next member of Congress from the 3rd Congressional District in Washington State. And he's running against a very, very liberal young lady named Marie Glusenkamp-Perez, effectively the Democrat nominee, although Washington State has this crazy jungle primary. Joe, welcome back.
Hey, Lars. Great to be with you. Thank you for having me.
So tell me about this. There is something that the psychologists call projection. And that is when one person is doing something wrong, they like to point fingers at everybody else and accuse them of doing it. Now, Marie Glusenkamp-Perez, the minute the votes were certified that showed that you and she would be running off in November for the final position in Congress, she accused you of being a white nationalist and an extremist and all that. Is it entirely possible that she is, in fact, the extremist that she's been talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, according to her own social media, she was giving material support to Antifa. She owns her husband run an auto body shop in eastern Portland. And during the riots, during 2020, her husband was advertising from their official page that members of Antifa who were participating in the protests could come get their leaf blowers tuned up there. And as most people in the area know, the leaf blowers were being used by Antifa to repel the police officers' disruptive agents, but then also they were cooking up their own chemicals and using the leaf blowers to blow them onto police officers who were trying to either quell the riots or to just protect the federal courthouse building.
So has she ever explained or given any kind of explanation at all as to why she would take part in that way? Because that's something that wasn't required of her. She did that apparently voluntarily.
She did. Yeah, they said it was a free service they were providing. She did not. She said, well, some random employee posted that on their page, and I pointed out her husband. We had this conversation during the debate, and I pointed out, I said, well, that random employee is your husband. He's sitting right there in the front row. And she had no answer for that whatsoever. She just continued to call me an extremist and a white nationalist. And mostly that's because she doesn't want to talk about the issues like inflation, crime, how our children are being preyed upon in the schools, because these are all hallmarks of the Democrat agenda.
Yeah. And in fact, if she had to talk about those things, what in the world could she say? I mean, in some ways, I feel for the Democrats because they're having to run on the product of the Biden administration. As you said, massive inflation like America hasn't seen in 40 years. Gasoline prices that even when they came down a bit and then went back up were 50% higher than when Joe took the oath of office in January of last year. You've got real failures in places like Afghanistan, tens of billions of dollars being shipped off to Ukraine with no end in sight. Lots and lots of issues, and none of them seem to augur in favor of a Democrat candidate.
No, not whatsoever. And they can't hide from what they've done. And really, they've just become such an echo chamber. They've purged anybody from their party who even dissents from their rhetoric. So really, all they can do is these petty attacks. I mean, she even wanted to bring up abortion every 5 minutes because she thinks it's a very winning issue for Democrats. And I just point out the obvious. Look, I'm pro-life. However, the Democrat Party right now is so radical, thinking that taxpayers should pay for an abortion up into the 9th month of pregnancy, that position is even too radical for many people who even consider themselves to be pro-choice. So the radical Democrat agenda just it has nothing. So they continue to go back with this really incendiary rhetoric of just personal attacks.
I'm talking to Joe Kent, who's running against Marie Glusenkamp-Perez, both of them seeking the seat that was held by Rhino Republican Jamie Herrera Butler. And on the abortion issue, Joe, I'm also pro-life, but I'd love to talk to Ms. Perez about the fact that she apparently thinks that abortion is a federal issue. Well, her own party a couple of months ago said, we're going to vote on federalizing so-called abortion rights because the Supreme Court said this is a state decision. That doesn't necessarily stop the Congress from passing a law about abortion, but even her own party gave that up. They said they were going to vote on it sometime before the election. It hasn't happened yet, and I don't think it's going to happen because I think the Democrats realize it's a losing issue for them.
Yeah, I think the mainstream of the Democrat Party does, but Marie Perez has been really adamant that she thinks that taxpayers should continue to fund, you know, Planned Parenthood and to fund abortion. And again, this policy is just completely radical, even by people who consider themselves to be, you know, pro-choice. So between that and personal attacks, that's really all they have to run on. Because again, what's crushing people in the district and throughout the country is the fact that 1 month of their wages this year is being stolen because of inflation. And it's not safe to walk out onto our street. She's endorsed by the Democrats here at the state level who are letting child killers out of jail.
By the way, Joe, just talking about current events, you know, this horrible hurricane that ripped through Florida yesterday, and a lot of us have been asking because I really don't know the answer. We said you had a couple of million people left without power, hundreds of thousands at least that tried to flee and get out of the path of the storm. And a lot of us have wondered if Joe Biden and the Democrats get their, you know, their dream of having an all electrified America where all vehicles are electric vehicles. Can you imagine trying to evacuate even part of a state after a big natural disaster, whether it's a hurricane or an earthquake or anything else, using electric vehicles that have to be charged every couple of hundred miles?
No, that would be a disaster on top of a disaster. It's just, that's the problem with this whole conversion to green energy. It's simply not ready. The technology is not there. Most of the raw earth minerals and all the technology that we have to purchase, it goes with the Chinese Communist Party, be a payday for them. But also in just practical terms, in times when, you know, seconds and minutes matter, it's just not ready for prime time yet.
Well, I think she's lashing out at you because she realizes she's in a center-right district. You'd agree with that assessment of the 3rd Congressional District, would you not?
Oh, certainly. Absolutely.
And I just can't imagine the 3rd Congressional District. I mean, they were willing to tolerate a rhino like Jamie Herrera Butler, but she won re-election a number of times because she was the incumbent, and incumbency has a lot of power. But coming in as a far left-wing person, somebody who's, you know, through her own business, decided to aid and abet people like, you know, the Antifa rioters, I don't understand how she could possibly get the votes that would put her into the U.S. Congress. If people want to find your campaign online, where do they find you, Joe?
Yep, absolutely. Go to JoeKentForCongress.com. We're doing town halls every day of the week until the election day, just like we did during the primary. So come out and see us.
Is Ms. Perez doing any town halls where she'll take questions from all?
You know, she's done a handful, and she does not take questions from people who ask her hard questions. She really just wants to do personal attacks, and she's got these talking points that she pretends that she's this. She lives out in Skamania County, so she says, hey, I'm a rural, different, blue dog type of Democrat. But then when you ask her any pointed questions about policy, it's just the radical Democrat agenda.
Well, maybe that's why, even though we did our due diligence, we reached out to her. And I would tell you, if she came on the show, I'd be polite to her. But I would ask her those hard questions. Maybe that's why she's not taking our invitation to come on and actually answer questions from people in the 3rd Congressional District. That's Joe Kent. And he's, I think, going to be the next member of Congress from the 3rd Congressional District in Washington State. Now, I like to always tell you that I tell you if I have a dog in the fight. I do have a dog in the fight this time, and it is Joe Kent. I want him to be the next member of Congress because the woman that he's replacing, Jamie Herrera Butler, who misserved the 3rd Congressional District, at one point I think she might have actually been a good conservative, but I decided that she needed to go. She voted for the impeachment of Donald Trump the second time. She has not stood up for conservative principles. And frankly, I think she had become a rhino Republican. So when Joe Kent ran, I decided to endorse him.
I think he's going to make a great member of Congress, and I'm anxious to see whether or not the Democrat candidate who's running against him is going to have any success with a purely negative campaign, not one that actually takes responsibility for the terrible mess the Democrats have made of this country, but actually says, this is what I'm going to do, not just Joe Kent is a white nationalist. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show on a First Amendment Friday, live on the Radio Northwest Network, proudly serving the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk. If you want to jump in, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. This segment of the show brought to you by Valhalla Tea Company. It's made by veterans to help veterans by donating $1 from every bag sold at ValhallaTea.com. Let's go first to Scott. Hey, Scott, it's First Amendment Friday, so everything is fair game. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Lars. I wanted to talk to you about the biodiesel plant that you were talking about yesterday in the Willamette Week's article.
Yeah, it sounded like kind of a joke to me because they said, we're going to do it from fish guts. And my first question was, are there that much fish guts in the entire country? And as it turns out, there aren't. Now, I know they can use other dead animals and turn them into biodiesel, but when they're promising 50,000 barrels a day production, and the U.S. uses about 20 million barrels a day, it would be a contribution, but I kind of wonder where the finances of it go. And I asked the gentleman who was on, who was a reporter from Willamette Week. You can find their story at wweek.com. And I said, well, aren't there a lot of subsidies built into the sale of it? And I got an email shortly afterward from a gentleman who said, Lars, I'm in the biodiesel business. He said a lot of the biodiesel we're selling at $3.50 a gallon. He said the feedstock, you know, the waste oil that they're turning into it, sells for $5 a gallon. So there are gigantic subsidies built into that in the sale of it. What's your take on it?
Well, in discussing that with some of my friends, the idea came across to us, well, if the idea is the bottom line to make as much money as possible, the putting aside the morality or ethical ideas of it, what about deceased humans using them as biodiesel?
Oh, wow. You know, Scott, I would not disrespect human beings. I think we've got enough of that already, including Seattle's composting and all that. But if you ignore that part of it, there are about 7,000 people who die every day in the United States of various causes. And let's assume you could get all of them. And let's assume that they weigh about 200, say an average of 200 pounds. That might be a little high each. Then you're still not talking about a tremendous amount of stuff to be made into fuel. But, you know, I guess you could have the fuel.
You use it with the rest of
the dead stuff.
The fish and cow byproducts, et cetera.
I don't think it adds up to enough. And I think and this is where I wish people would be a little more discerning about what they get fed, because, oh yeah, we're going to take fish guts or we're going to take waste oil from restaurants. Well, the problem is there isn't enough of it to turn it into a sizable fraction of the fuel that America uses. So it sounds great, but even as Nigel Jake was mentioned, waste oil used to be a giant problem for restaurants because they couldn't get rid of it. But now there's a market for waste oil, not just turning it into fuel, but turning it into other things. And you can't get it for free anymore. And you don't even get it at it's used in a lot of other products. So we're essentially looking for some magic genie solution where you rub the side of the bottle and the genie pops out and you get free fuel at no real cost. And the fact is, life doesn't work that way. Physics doesn't work that way, does it?
No. You're right. Though, if you look at some of the scientific things that you were talking about earlier with bioengineering humans and AI, I might point you towards some of the documentaries about the CRISPR children.
Okay, I'll take a look at them. Thanks for the recommendation. Let's go to Alan. Hey, Alan, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Hey, I was just curious. I know the last 27 years I've sat in the ballot room watched the counting of the ballots, opening of the ballots, certification, signatures and all. One of the biggest things I have a concern with this year, at the bottom shelf, every year we have approximately, over the years I've watched, except last year we had about 1,200 ballots that they're stamped non-forwardable. Now, did a little digging and trying to ask the questions about it, and they didn't want to. I mean, it's been over the 20-year reign in asking these different people what and why. And this year, we had over 2,000 ballots that sat there, undeliverable. I talked right to the post office about it. They said they didn't see them, nor did they have that stamp. So I'm real curious if they're not. And then I did the research and found out that these are supposedly dead people that have been living in elder care facilities and all that. And over 18 years ago, I went to one of the facilities and asked. They had 162 people, 162 in the place. They had 300 that were supposed to be there that weren't, that were dead. And the county's yep still counting those. Still.
And what they should do, you know what any reasonable person would do running an election system. They'd say, if a ballot comes back undeliverable, we're going to send out one more notice and say, you know, we want to make sure we don't take you off the voter rolls. And if they don't get a response on that, then they take that person off the voter rolls. But states like Oregon and Washington have decided to leave people on the voter rolls, so they have thousands and thousands of ballots that aren't going to a real person. They aren't going to a real address. They're just floating around out there, and I think they are a tremendous opportunity for fraud, and sending them benefits absolutely no one. Alan, thanks for the call. It's First Amendment Friday, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.